The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed. We're back for another edition of Raised by Wolves. We are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm Manny Hill. Derek James is here. And the original plan for this week was Matthew Collar was going to join you.
But you just had to get off the boat. And yeah. You really needed to do that live read yourself. It's what gets you through every week,
yes.
From what I understand.
Yes. Well, we love our folks at TCL. The original plan was going to be Matthew Collar was going to be in my spot this week because I just got back from a pretty awesome cruise.
Ducking the blizzard.
Yeah, and it was totally by design, folks. It was totally by design. I foresaw when I set this cruise up last summer, I completely could see that on the weekend of April 13th through the 15th, we were going to get a ton of snow in Minnesota.
A historic snowstorm in April. So what was the best thing you ate on the cruise?
Oh, my gosh.
I missed your four things. Well, I heard like the first one.
On the ride today.
Yeah.
Man, we had so much good stuff. Like there was, okay, so we were on the cruise. We flew down to Miami on Thursday the 12th. Mm-hmm. And so we were in Miami for 2 days. And we actually set sail from Miami on Saturday afternoon, the 14th. And we sailed to Key West on the 15th. And every day, this was all included in, you know, everything that we paid for. There was breakfast, lunch, and then we had a special dinner timed out for 6 o'clock every evening on the cruise. And it was like breakfast buffet is like anything you could think of that you would want for breakfast. you could have. Like I didn't have everything. I kept it pretty basic, you know, bacon, eggs, toast, and
see, sometimes
you know,
I see
a
buffet
a while,
like that, or like an omelet bar is like a challenge,
yeah,
where I have to try everything and I don't need to, but like some things tend to look so good, so it's actually kind of incredible that you have that kind of restraint.
Yeah, but it's like the even just the basic breakfast stuff that I had, you know, I basically had bacon, eggs, toast, or toast or a biscuit pretty much every day.
But honestly, the simple stuff can just be the best sometimes.
Well, it was just the quality of it was just so good. Like it was it was worth every penny. And dinner was, you know, and lunch they had like, you know, you could have like either like a turkey burger or, you know, a regular burger. And then they had a bunch of other stuff, you know, pastas and different things like that. Typical lunch stuff. But it was all like it was fantastic. And dinner was just... Dinner was off the charts. Like
they had like steak 2 days in a row and salmon.
Yeah,
one
I had steak. I had steak 2 days. I had salmon just the one day.
This is how the other half lives, folks. Just so you know.
Yes, exactly. And then what did I have? I keep forgetting what I had because it was 4 days. The cruise was, and I had steak twice.
Is it also because adult beverages were included too?
Well, adult beverages were not included.
Okay.
I will have to. Yeah, I'll have to confess that.
That keeps things included in check a little better.
Yeah, yeah, and I'd spent a fair amount of money on adult beverages.
But you're on vacation, and dude, you never go on vacation. You were the only one to be on every episode of the show.
Right, and I had not been on, I had not taken a vacation since, I mean, my girlfriend and I went to Milwaukee for a weekend last summer, because she's got one of her best friends lives out in Milwaukee, so we went out and spent the weekend with them last summer, but that was it. Like, I really haven't taken a vacation.
Like I love Milwaukee, but that's like 6 hours in a car. Okay,
yeah.
You're there for like a day and change. You have
I took like
you
one day off of work.
Back.
I took like 1 day off of work. So yeah, but no, it was great. It was a wonderful time. The weather was fantastic. The food was great. I will admit, I had a lot of margaritas. Probably more margaritas than I've had in my life. But no, everything was great. It was a wonderful time, and I'm back, and I mean, came back to snow on the ground in my driveway, and that was,
Hold on. You also not mentioning that it's 55 degrees on the day that we're taping this on Thursday.
That's true.
So yeah. It's like you missed like the, you got like the 26 degrees and.
Well, when we came back, I mean, we came back this morning and it was cold. It was like in the 20s.
I suppose so.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of a shocker, but no, it was a wonderful time and, definitely something I'd like to do again.
You know what the Wolves would like to do again?
Win a game.
Have game two back again.
Yeah, that was...
Is that kind of what we thought, though? Like,
I think it was. This is what gets me. Like, we go into a series like this, and we talked about it last week after the Denver game, and they clinched the last spot and everything. And like, we talked, like, this is a bad matchup for them. The Houston Rockets is a terrible matchup for them, and we've seen these... You know, this is the last night was the sixth time they've played a game this year, I think, right? Because they played four in the regular season.
Yeah.
And the Rockets have been the better team every single time. So I don't understand. Like, we knew that this was going to be an uphill battle. And look, they had a chance to win game one and they didn't do it. And
I will say, if you looked at game one, and thought, like, wow, this means that the Wolves could actually win a game in this series. Yes, maybe if, you know, Harden's supporting cast goes 3 for 25.
Right.
The Wolves committed too many turnovers. And that's the amazing thing with this Rockets team right now. Their defense is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, the Wolves didn't turn the ball over. I think they're actually the best team in protecting the ball in the regular season. And they are coughing it up a pretty high amount right now.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at game one and you say, okay, well, you know, Harden got his 44, and you know Capella Clint Capella had a terrific game, but nobody else on the Rockets played well. And you're saying, okay, had an outside chance to win this game. Like that was their shot to even have a chance at making this a series to me. Like that, if you're gonna steal a game in Houston, which that was the one that you had to steal.
Like, we already knew this team couldn't play well against the Rockets. We know right. They don't play well on the road. And so I just think to come into these first games, I think Andy Grimsrud at PD Wolves on Twitter, he put it perfectly. If you look at where you were last Saturday when the series began and now after two games, you really sit there and think, well, this team deserves extra criticism outside of what you would have expected. I mean, they almost won a game against a better team with more experience.
Yeah.
And you have to feel good about that stride at least.
Yeah, you do. And I think that at this point now, you can just hope that, you know, maybe they can be as competitive as possible in these two home games coming up this weekend. And, you know, maybe you find a way to, you know, maybe you catch Harden on another off shooting night like last night, but I don't think that's very likely. And maybe you can find a way to sneak a game, but this is last night, you know, or game two, depending on when you're listening to this. Game two basically just it showed everybody, yeah, this is a 1-8 matchup in the Western Conference. Like this is what happens. The eighth seed is always going to be up against it. The Wolves have not been a very good road team this year. The Rockets have been great at home. The Rockets are a great team, period. And
just stylistically,
the Wolves got their butts kicked.
This is just asking for trouble. Do you want me to go through those stats that I kind of teased before?
Yes.
All right. So in terms of three-point percentage,
oh boy,
the Houston Rockets are 15th right now. They can't make a shot. But the Timberwolves
out of the 16 teams.
Out of the 16, yeah.
Okay.
The Timberwolves are 13th, unsurprisingly, but they're hitting less than 32%. They're like, oh, good. They're level playing field, you know. We'll turn it into a rock fight.
So the Rockets are 15th in percentage?
Yeah.
Okay.
29.2 to the Wolves is 31.7. So the Wolves are actually shooting better.
Yeah.
However, the Wolves are shooting half as many three-pointers per game as the Rockets. The Rockets are making 13 per game. The Wolves are making 6.5. They're not even giving themselves a chance with those kind of numbers.
Yeah, I mean, well, Matt Cheetah, who follows me on Twitter, you know, he presented a question to me and Royce this afternoon, and it kind of goes back to something that you and I have talked about in the past about just the volume of 3-point shots attempted. He said, "Curious what your thoughts are on regarding this idea." To try and shoot as many threes as the Rockets. I was surprised that the Rockets don't have anyone who was shooting 40% plus from three. And, well, we talked about with Eric Gordon, right? Like, mm-hmm. Eric Gordon only shot like 33% from three this year. 33 or 34%.
He had a weird year.
Yeah. So you look at the percentage and you're like, God, he's not that good of a shooter. But he took like 9 a game. So it's like, and what do we, you've talked about this several times mm-hmm. with the Celtics from a couple of years ago with Brad Stevens, where the percentages,
the Sixers, all bad 3-point shooting teams.
But they still shot a lot of them.
But yeah, as far as efficiency, but at least give yourself a chance because you're going to have those nights where everything clicks and connects and it's all going to drop for you.
Yeah, and if you're not going to take a lot of threes and you're just going to take a lot of twos, you better hit them at a really, really high percentage. Otherwise, you can't trade twos for threes. Like you just can't. You can't do that when the Rockets are going to throw up, 50 of them a night and probably hit somewhere between, 15 and 20.
Yeah, I think that first game is really skewing the sample because Harden was the only one who could really find a shot in game one. And then the rest of his team was 3 for 25. And that's the thing. When the Rockets have an off shooting night, what do? They come out the next night. They know their game. They don't get away from it. They figure maybe the shot will come back. By the third quarter, hopefully by the fourth quarter, whatever, we'll get them next game. They don't get away from what works. They don't look at one bad game or off night and go, well, that just doesn't work, period. When in reality, you're going to have those weird nights. And I think one other thing that is interesting, it might surprise people, given the reputation that D'Antoni's teams, even though that's kind of been put into a little better context as far as defense goes, like D'Antoni's Suns teams weren't great defensively by any means, but they aren't as bad as people remember, mm-hmm. given their pace when you adjust. I mean, they're still probably slightly below average, but they weren't, as horrible as people think. Their defense is the best in the playoffs, ahead of the Pacers. Mm-hmm. 96 defensive rating right now. And wow. It just goes to show they held the Wolves to 82 points Wednesday night.
Belly was the leading scorer at 16 points in game two.
Yeah.
Off the bench. Yeah, I mean, the other thing with the Rockets, too, is, I mean, they have so many options with, I mean, they take a lot of threes, but it's not like it's one or two guys taking a lot of threes. They if one guy is having a bad shooting night, they can just throw him, like, look at Gerald Green.
Yeah. If
Gerald Green played, 4 minutes in game one? Four
and
or five minutes
in
game
21.
One? And then drops 21 and 12 in game two. Like, they have so many guys that, and it's funny because
Gerald Green was just sitting there looking for a job a few weeks ago.
Right. Well, what's interesting, too, is when you look at D'Antoni's Phoenix teams, especially that first year when Nash went back there and when he won his first MVP, D'Antoni only played like eight or nine guys pretty much the whole season.
Yeah.
Like, he did not go deep into his bench at all.
D'Antoni did that for years.
Yeah, he did not go into his bench at all. But now he will play 10, 12 guys. If one guy is having an off shooting night, he can just bring in another guy.
Because now I think the NBA has really caught up to what he was getting at 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And having guys who can play some defense, hit threes, and can get to the basket. And I mean, I think that's because what I thought about D'Antoni when he's with the Knicks, he wasn't a bad coach. Even with the Lakers, I didn't think he was a bad coach. I thought they were all bad situations.
Yeah.
But I did think one weakness he had was that if he had a guy who didn't perfectly fit with what he was looking to do, I didn't think he was very good at adapting to his whole roster.
Right.
And so that player just wouldn't play. And now he just has a bunch of D'Antoni guys that just fit his vision and Daryl Morey's vision for what they want to do. So from top to bottom in that organization, there is just this continuity in thinking. Just from top to bottom, what guys want to do. Players want to play this way. So it just all works so well. And we look at the Timberwolves, there's none of that.
Yeah. Well, that's I think, when you think about the Wolves, I think that's one of the biggest problems that they have is that there's not a lot of... I think the Wolves have a lot of nice players. You have a great young player in Towns. You have a great player who's like in his prime right now in Jimmy Butler. You've got a really nice glue guy in Taj Gibson. You got a really solid point guard, Jeff Teague. So they have good players, But there's not a lot of – there's not really a whole lot of, like, versatility. And there's the league – you look around the league, versatility is just, like, the biggest thing. You have a good – you have a guy who's a good defender. Well, can he defend, you know –
How many positions
can he defend? Can he shoot threes? Is he a good rebounder? Can he facilitate a little bit? And the Wolves just don't really have a lot of guys that have, you know, that
when
that
I
are
say
versatile.
This, I love Taj. But they go, let's see, we have Gorgui Dieng at $16 million per year. What do we need? Taj Gibson at $14 million a year. It's like, wait a minute. Taj Gibson is the better version of Gorgui Dieng.
Right. Well, and that's the ultimate debate is like now, okay, do you look back and you say, well, they shouldn't have signed Taj? I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I think maybe we lean more towards maybe they shouldn't have given Gorgui the deal that he got.
And he, you know, we already thought he took a discount too.
Right.
That's the thing.
That's the crazy thing. Yeah. So I don't know. But I think it's good that they're in the playoffs and that they're getting their nose bloodied up a little bit. Towns in particular. I mean, he's, you know, I kind of went off.
He's down in it
last night, but, you know, Cat has not played well, obviously the first two games and it's funny because you got a close game in the fourth quarter in game one. And Towns isn't getting any shots, and everybody's mad that he's not getting any shots. And then the narrative switches from that in game one to game two, where he's getting shots, but now it's bad shots. And then
he was still 2 for 9 in both games,
right? So I mean, I don't. It's I think right now he's just in a situation where he's not playing well. This is his first playoffs, and the Wolves are playing a team that is just, across the board, just worlds better than they are. And you combine that, and you're going to get a bad performance from your franchise player, and he's got to learn from it, and he's got to get better. But we knew that going into this season. Like, we knew that throughout the season that, yes, Towns is terrific, but there's things he needs to get better at. The thing with Charles Barkley that just set me off was just he's limited offensively part of it, where it's like, okay.
This feels like Dwight Howard conversations 10 years ago with people not paying attention.
Yeah, and the thing of it is you know, I tweeted out like how absurd I thought that notion was, and then you have people say, well, that's not what Charles meant. And look, I know what this is about with Charles Barkley. He's always been like this. He's been on TNT for 18 years, I think it's 18 years now, and he has always been like this. Charles Barkley and, to a lesser degree, Shaquille O'Neal, have this idea that if you are 7 feet tall or if you are a center, you should not be shooting three-pointers. That you need to be on the low block all the time, posting people up and dominating. Like, that's where they view that. They think every seven-footer in the NBA is supposed to be like that.
They're both just pissed because they couldn't hit threes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, I mean, Charles Barkley shot 26%. On over 1,000 three-point attempts. It's like, dude, step in the line, pass, drive, anything but take that three.
Yeah, so to me it's like, especially in the case of the Wolves, where you're not a great three-point shooting team, and you really only have one guy who's been consistently shooting the three-ball well this year, and it's your 7-foot center. Downs is the only guy who's consistently shot the three ball well this year. Like, Tyus started out shooting it pretty well early in the season.
Belly
had a nice stretch, but Towns has been like the only guy who consistently, really from the start of the season till now, has been hitting threes with consistency. And, you know, when you're in a situation where you're going up against a team that throws up 50 threes a night, and you can't, it's hard to just post Towns up and then expect him to go to work when the Rockets are going to just collapse on him.
But do it in an up-tempo manner.
We're doing it in an up-tempo manner. And, oh, by the way, the Rockets are collapsing on him and making things even harder for him. And it doesn't help because you don't have any shooters surrounding him that can spread the floor and take some of the pressure off. So,
because that's the thing with James Harden. I mean, the obvious thing with Harden is like, well, put another guy on him. Okay, do you really want to leave P.J. Tucker in the corner or Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson?
Or Ariza.
Or Luke Richard-Mbamute when he's healthy. I mean,
or Gerald Green from what we saw in game two. Like, don't leave him open.
We haven't even mentioned Chris Paul yet.
Right.
He's a future Hall of Famer.
Right. How good was he in game two, by the way?
That's just the scary thing. Yeah. That not only they could survive a terrible game from Chris Paul in game one, but then they can survive a worse game probably from James Harden in game two and still win because of Chris Paul. But going back to the Towns thing, what I wrote today for the website 1500ESPN.com is that I just get the sense that Towns wants to be great. I mean, just hearing everything that he says and his work ethic, the way that he gets upset when things, you know, go south in a game. I mean, he cares. He wants to be great. I don't think we don't have the same conversation about him as we do Wiggins, where we kind of question that.
Right.
And so with that, I do think that he's kind of, he's just not playing his game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not being aggressive enough. He's just not asserting himself into the game. He has three fouls in two games. I mean, as the 7-foot starting center who's playing over, he only played 30 minutes last night, but there was also kind of a lost cause.
Yeah.
But who plays as much as he does, he should have more than three fouls. He should also, I mean, we also don't see him take those same shots that he took in game two last night. I mean, those contested step back fadeaways, not even thinking about passing out of a double team when he sees it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is just not his game. And I just, you know, think that if maybe it's a coaching thing where they go, hey, what are you doing? Settle down.
Yeah.
Just take it possession by possession and stop worrying about, you know, the bigger picture. Just focus on this moment, what you're doing right there. Because, I mean, he can play well. It just feels like he's, you know, pressing and just trying to do too much offensively and trying to be too careful, I think, on defense. And not trying to screw things up. I think that's like what he's doing right now. He's playing not to, you know, mess things up and cause problems, but he's causing more problems in doing that rather than if he just played his game and made a few mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine because he's going to grow out of that if he's just, you know, being himself out there on the floor, and he's not. But I do like the fact that this gives him and Wiggins the opportunity to really look at things this summer and say, well, that did not go well.
Yeah.
But we learned a lot from that.
I think the biggest challenge for Towns going forward is just to sort of find a middle ground between, you know, trying not to screw up and trying to do too much.
Yeah.
You know, where like there's no, it's either one or the other with him, and he's got to find that middle ground. Because I'll look at like, I'll go back to the second to last Denver game, the one in Denver where they where they lost. And when he fouled out, and I didn't like the call. I didn't think it was a good call. But at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, you've got five fouls in that particular situation.
Yep.
And it's a one-point game, and your team needs you out on the floor because Wiggins is not playing well. You didn't have Jimmy Butler for that game.
Yep.
Like, you need to be on the floor. So, unfortunately, you have five fouls. And
nothing you can do about that.
Nothing you can do about that. And you, because you have five fouls and because you are so vital to the team having a chance to win that game, you need to be on the floor. And unfortunately, it sucks, but you have to defend differently. You can't be as aggressive as you would normally want to be. And I felt like in that situation, and Jamal Murray knew he had five fouls. So of course Jamal Murray is going to do exactly what he did.
The whole team was calling it out. Towns has five.
Yes. And Cat, in that particular situation, it just, you know, the shot clock's winding down and he's trying, and I get it. Like, he's trying to make a play and you can't fault him for trying to make a play there. But that, in that particular situation, it's like, he's got to understand, I got five fouls here. So I just got to stand up, put my hand up. I can't jump into it. Because, like, people were saying, well, Murray jumped into it. Well, Cat sort of leaped, sort of sidestepped.
Perception is reality.
Exactly. Like, Cat sort of sidestepped his body into that spot.
And the 7-footer does not get the benefit of the doubt, no. Especially with a guard a lot of times.
And in that particular situation, like, he's got to know, like, okay, I can't just put my hand up. I'm 7 feet tall. Put my hand up, contest the shot. The shot clock's winding down, so it's not a very high percentage shot that Jamal Murray's taken in that situation. Put the hand up and that's it. And then, so there's that. And then it goes back to what you were saying about these last two games, where now all of a sudden he's being too passive on defense because now he's I don't know exactly what he's thinking, but maybe he's thinking about that Denver game when he fouled out, and now he's thinking, oh God, I can't be too aggressive now.
I mean, he's got to find
the middle ground.
He does have one block per game. I mean, so he's making some plays here and there.
Yeah.
But the fact that the three fouls thing just tells me that he's not, he's kind of, you know, being a little sheepish in as far as getting into it and, you know, not wanting to take too many chances or put his team in a bad position, which is admirable. But you're also killing your team by the way that you're playing now. And I think that's part of the experience, too. Because, I mean, you look at everything in the playoffs, it really is ramped up. The noise of the crowd.
What did Matt Moore tell us last week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just even the crowd is different. And I'm sure he's experiencing, like, oh, I played against Clint Capela before. Oh, playoff Clint? And it's like you're trying to post up Nene over and over again. Mm-mm. Nene is 1,000 years old and like with the old man strength to go with it, you're not moving him. I mean, if he has you posted up 12, 15 feet out, please get rid of it and don't force it. I mean, there are other things he was doing that drives me nuts too. And I think even guys like Kevin McHale have talked about this. In a post up, you know, when they go to take the turnaround shot rather than drive to the basket, which I don't understand why more guys don't do.
Mm-hmm.
Towns, instead of, you know, making a move towards the basket, decides to fade away and roll away from the basket, moving himself, making it a longer shot. I mean, just little things like that. It's like, what are you doing? Like, you make some tough shots, but they at least have a chance. And when you're off balance and leaning with, you know, a guy pushing you and a hand in your face, that's not a good shot.
No. It comes down to decision-making and just sort of understanding where you are and understanding situations and, you know, and all that's, I mean, all that's going to come, I think, with him, with experience. He's not limited offensively. He has an unbelievable array of skills. But he's just got to, you know, he's in a good position that he's getting kind of pushed around a little bit. It's the playoffs and Clint Capela is ready to play and PJ Tucker and some of these other guys, you know, Nene and, that you mentioned, like, these guys are coming to play, and they're coming to kick your rear end.
And I look at a guy like Nene, who still has some skills. I mean, of course, I mean, he's in the NBA, but he's been around forever. At this point, is there any way that Towns isn't better than Nene? Of course not.
Right.
But Nene knows that he has the experience. He knows probably most of what Towns is going to do before he does it and how he can frustrate him, or at least test him and see if he can frustrate him and get him to make the same, you know, inexperienced player mistakes over and over again.
Look at what
that's
Taj
where the
did.
Edge is.
Look at what Taj did to Nokic.
Jokic. Oh, yeah.
Jokic. Yeah. And then
it was more like Nokic game. In the end of that game, am I right?
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that was a classic case of that right there. Like, Taj has been in the league a long time, and he knows, you know, he's done his homework
on Jokic. He knows what the refs are going to call.
Yeah.
He knows what you're going to do. He knows what's going to get under your skin.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those things where young players, they just got to learn it. They got to learn it. And the only way you're really going to learn
like
it
three
is
years
if you go
ago
through
when we started this show.
I know.
They just got to learn parodying Sam Mitchell the entire time.
These guys got to learn it. These
but
guys,
this, it really you know. Is just an entirely different feel
yes.
to this.
This is a totally new thing for Wiggins and Towns in particular. This is a completely new experience. They've been in the league for, you know, Wiggins is in his fourth year, Towns is in his third year. But this is, you know, you get to the playoffs for the first time, this is a totally different beast.
I mean, and even Gorgie, who's 28 years old, won a national title in Louisville, he's not playing against, like, future accountants. These are NBA players, and they are also grown men. I mean, Nemanja Bjelica was an MVP in Europe, but this is, you know, the next step above that. So these
Tyus
guys,
Jones was a most out. It was the MOP of the Final Four in 2015.
And yeah, and he's 21.
Yeah. So
going against Chris Paul.
Yeah. So nonetheless, the Rockets are a very, very difficult matchup for the Wolves, as we've, you know, I think we all kind of knew that going in. And I think it's pretty much a consensus idea that the Rockets are going to win this series, and the Wolves, the end of the road for the Wolves is going to be within the next week or so. But looking ahead now to this offseason, You know, I mean, obviously there's still basketball left to be played, but
a couple more games.
Looking ahead to this offseason, I you know, there's going to be some question marks, I think, big time in terms of, you know, the future of Jimmy Butler. You know, is Gorgui Dieng going to be part of the future? I mean, he's got a contract that's going to be a little bit maybe difficult to move if you want to move him. You know, Wiggins, you know, what are they going to do with Wiggins? How is, you know, are they
going to... Does Glenn Taylor shake up the front office a little bit?
Yeah, that's, I think these are questions that you have to think about.
Because it really sounds like, especially from the Zach Lowe tweet about, you know, concerns about Towns' usage and kind of the debate, there's apparently internal debate per Zach Lowe about Towns' usage. So, I mean, that tells me that there's some disconnect there between management, ownership, or players, or somewhere in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've got a... I think there's a lot of things that need to be... There's questions that need to be answered. There's issues that need to be worked on, I think, you know, going forward. I mean, this, you know, Wiggins and Jimmy Butler, we got to figure out, you know, they have to figure out, can those two really coexist? I mean, they've, for this year, they've tried to, you know, have those two guys play alongside each other. And, you know, there have been some ups and downs. And now you've got to figure out, you know, long term, can these two guys coexist on the floor at the same time? Or do you need to make a change with one or the other to sort of bring in another guy that might fit with them? I mean, that's something that, you know, if Wiggins is going to be here, and obviously the contract has been signed and he's going to get his money either way, if Wiggins is still going to be a part of your future and you want Jimmy Butler to be a part of your future, you got to figure that out. That's like priority one in my mind.
Someone brought this up today. I think it was on Mackie and Judd. I forget who it was exactly. But there was... Oh, it was Doogie, because he was talking about J.B. Bickerstaff on his Scoop podcast, and how J.B. was talking about how the Rockets team that he was an interim coach for just a couple seasons ago, They only have three players that he coached on the current roster.
Harden, Capella,
Rhino? Or no, Ariza. It had to be Ariza.
Ariza?
I think so. I don't. They didn't give the names, but still, that's a lot of turnover, but that's what they had to do to get to where they were now. Because that J.B. Bickerstaff team was the eighth seed. I mean, there was the last Dwight year, just a total nightmare.
And they got swept by Golden State, right?
Yep.
And that was the 73-9 Warriors team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's... I mean,
so my point there was mostly they got to figure out a way to, you know, retool this roster, do something, and get creative.
Yeah, and I think there's a way to do it, because I don't think there are too many... I mean, you have the Wiggins contract, but I think, you know, there's still an opportunity to try and fix that and to get him going on the right path. You know, it's going to be tough and it's going to be difficult, but I think there's still a shot to try and get that going in the right direction. And you have, you know, you have Gorgie's deal that's kind of hanging and lingering, and you got to figure out what you're going to do with that. But, you know, you got Taj going into the second year of a 2-year deal, you know, and you got Jeff Teague. You know, Jeff Teague only has 2 years on his deal too. So there's
they can mostly hit the reset button after 2019,
right? Retooling is a possibility, and it's not going to be, I don't think, as difficult to do.
Is there any way Teague doesn't opt out if he has another year like this one? I mean, he was pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, if he has another good year,
try to get another long-term deal as you get to, what is he, about 30, 31?
I think he 31. Turns. I think he turns 30 this year if he's not 30 already. So, yeah, I mean, that if he has another good year, maybe he does opt out and tries to get himself a, you know, another like 2 or 3 year contract and a little more security. And that, you know, if you decide you want to move on from him, although, I mean, Jeff's been good this year, so I don't know. But a lot of questions I think this offseason will need to be answered. And you know what? These last couple games here, this series, you know, I'll be perfectly honest. I don't think anybody expects the Wolves to win this series, and that's okay. And I think just for what I want to see in these last couple games against the Rockets is just play as well as you possibly can. And, you know, I think give the fans and give – the rest of us, you know, just some hope that there is something, that you still got something cooking here, and you know, we'll see how things go going forward. So
I really do think coming home though is going to help Cat a lot, and just settle in, you know, with a friendly crowd for a change, familiar environment. Yeah, I'll be able to get at least more on track than what he was in Houston.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see a really good crowd at Target Center these next two games, and we have not seen that, you know, in a long
time. That building is going to be electric. I can't wait.
Yeah, we have not seen that for, you know, I mean, we saw it a little bit in the Denver game, obviously. It was kind of a playoff atmosphere, but for Wolves games, there have not been very many games in the last decade plus where the house is really rocking. We've seen a lot of it for Lynx games over the years. But
this can be a basketball town.
Yes, it can be. It can be a basketball town for sure. Thanks to you at home for listening, or wherever you may be, for listening to the Raised by Wolves podcast. We'll be back with another edition next week. We were brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Search for us on iTunes. Subscribe to us if you have not done that already. You can also find us on podcast1.com and, of course, 1500ESPN.com as well. For Derek James, I am Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your Wolves basketball, and we'll talk to you next week.